Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of Sports Daily. It's a Tuesday here, our first Tuesday show of the new year. Don't worry. That'll be annoying only for one more week here. As we get through the first of 2026, we get conference basketball back tonight in the Big 12. KU in action. Some pretty significant, meaningful updates from Bill Self in regards to the young Darren Peterson yesterday. So we'll get you the latest on what Bill Self said yesterday and everything else happening with KU. We'll also get you some K-State talk today with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. Not just hoops, but we will be talking all the different things that have been happening with K-State football as well. There have been a lot, some good news, mostly unsettling news, I would say, for K-State football. So we'll get Wyatt Thompson's thought on that and the Wildcats basketball Big 12 opener and moving forward there. Black Monday in the NFL, lots of coaches have been fired. How many deserved it? What are the best jobs? We can get into some of that today and discuss a little further the college football playoff as it makes its way through. We just, quite frankly, ran out of time on that yesterday. But it's all what's on tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, now pouring the brand new seasonal Bock Lager. Bock, yeah. A cold beer that'll give you a warm feeling. Bock Lager available at all three WBC brew pubs, east near Central and Woodlawn, west at 13th and Tyler, and in historic Delano at Handley. Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. Max Power has KFH hotline at 869-1240. You can get in touch with the show via Facebook, YouTube, X. Leave your video comments there. Thanks to those listening to us on the Odyssey app, and thanks to those watching us on 12 News Connected. Here's TJ Cleland. Good morning, TJ. How are you?
Good morning. I was worried that if you were going to be here after Black Monday, if either of us got canned like all the coaches around the NFL, Kevin Stefanski might be my new co-host. I was wondering.
Did Stefanski go?
Yes. Did you miss that?
I missed that one.
That was the big one.
I saw Pete Carroll was the headline grabber. I knew Jonathan Gannon got axed. We already knew Brian Callahan was gone. I see Stefanski now. I saw Raheem Morris was gone. There's some GM spots, and then the Giants have a vacancy as well. So all told, six head coaches. That feels pretty normal for a Black Monday in the NFL. Which of those jobs? That'll be a fun conversation that we can get into a little bit later. All of these teams
are you ready?
Course,
are you ready
in common
for this Sports Daily conversation to come back of the head coach of the Cleveland Browns could be Deion Sanders?
Okay. We'll have that conversation. Again, I missed the Stefanski one. I was the most interested in Pete Carroll because 1 year, right? That was the one that garnered most of my attention yesterday. And then I start thinking about, well, which one of these jobs would I want the most if I was a prospective candidate? I saw Kurt Cignetti's name rolled around by some people this morning. And I'm like, 64-year-old Cignetti with no ties to the NFL? I don't think so.
No chance.
But we'll get into that. We'll get into that a little bit later. It's a weird time. You know, it's teams typically with patience pay off to some degree, but two of these coaches, Brian Daboll and Kevin Stefanski, have been allowed a lot of patience over the years. So, you know, people act like there's a golden formula in the NFL to getting the head coaching right. I can tell you, for me, it's you got to catch lightning in a bottle with a quarterback.
You got to have a good quarterback. You got to have a good quarterback, and that decides how good of a coach you are.
Look at Jim Harbaugh and how he has timed his shot perfectly. There are some that don't have to have the quarterback right away. I think Sean Payton fits that mold of guys that have kind of gotten to their current jobs in more recent years. He did it without one and then went and found one. You know, so there, I think there are kind of two tiers of those guys. We've seen Kevin O'Connell, you know, be moderately successful now with three different quarterbacks. Our pal Brandon Zinner probably doesn't agree with that, but you know, they finish 8-8 this year. We'll see if Kirk Cousins is the future, but sometimes like it's, you know, these guys can be okay.
That was a good Freudian slip there. You just asked if Kirk Cousins is the future in Minnesota.
Did I say that?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. J.J. McCarthy. Kirk Cousins was the starter.
That'd be a wild story. Bring him back home.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, J.J. McCarthy. But it was, you know, Cousins, and then it was Darnold, and then it was McCarthy slash the other six guys. They played a quarterback this year. So there are young guys where you give a little more patience and time. There are all kinds of ways this stuff goes, but there aren't a whole lot of coaches that are just successful regardless, right? Your Andy Reid's. So it really is, as you look at these jobs, you got to kind of look at them and just be like, well, yeah, who's my quarterback though? And that's, I think, makes the some jobs a whole lot better than the others. But this year, a lot of these teams are going to be in a position to swing at a quarterback. Can you time it well to say, okay, we may not get our guy this year, but maybe we have a shot at Arch Manning next year? Like, there's a lot of, and we'll see. I don't know that we have any big names, at least that I've heard yet, rumored for any of these jobs. Like, there is no Sean Payton this year. There is no Jim Harbaugh. There is no Andy Reid, even though that's been a lifetime ago, just sitting out there waiting. Mike Vrabel fits that mold. Like, those guys aren't really out there, at least that I can think of off the top of my head. So, you're probably getting a lot of first-time head coaches. There's a retread rumor with Matt Nagy for the Chiefs. He's been rumored for the Titans job. They apparently already want to interview him.
Did you see the Titans asked to interview both Matt Nagy and Steve Spagnuolo?
Yeah, we'll try
both of them.
Yeah, you know, Brandon's already texting me, giving me a hard time. I don't know. The Chiefs part of this is interesting. We'll also discuss that today. If you're a Chiefs fan today, I mean, nobody wants to see Spags go. Do you want to see Matt Nagy go? I mean,
does it matter?
I think it matters. Yeah, I do think it matters.
I think the Chiefs fans want to see him go based on the offense. The offense hasn't been as good under his second stint as OC. But at the end of the day, like, how much is it going to matter if it's Matt Nagy or Eric Bieniemy whenever Andy Reid calls all the plays, you know?
Well, listen, look at the success level. There's
a number. I don't know what it is.
You think it's mattered?
I mean, I don't know if it's that or if it's something. I mean, I'm just saying correlation does not mean causation in this situation, but it could.
No, it doesn't, but I think you can't ignore what we've seen either. Like, there's a lot of factors. I'm not blaming Matt Nagy for the Chiefs' offensive woes, but I'm also not going to ignore the fact that they haven't been as good since he's been the guy, you know, technically speaking by title, in charge of that group. How can you ignore that? I mean, I don't think you can. I think it has more to do with other things, but it's a factor. So we'll see. They couldn't get Eric Bieniemy apparently out of town fast enough, and it hasn't been as good since he's been gone. What do they do now? Right. I will see. I just, that would be such a weird hire to me for Tennessee. Why would you hire Matt Nagy? I don't get that. Like, what if his track record in Chicago makes you think, yep, that's a good fit. That's a good fit. I don't know.
And it feels like the entire, and obviously because of what happened at the Bears, like, he went viral for his face on the sideline after that one game and everything. And everybody remembers how that went with the Bears. And like, Chiefs fans are saying, like, why do you guys want Matt Nagy so bad? And then everybody else in the league is saying, you want that guy? You want Matt Nagy, the guy that coached the Bears? And, like, Titans fans I've already seen are making memes about, you know, like, if we hire Matt Nagy, we're done. Like, we're done. Like, we can't handle it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't
think he's going to be the hire, but he's the first one interviewed. We'll discuss that today. When we come back, though, let's talk Darren Peterson. Bill Self gives an update today. And Joe's totally says something that's the opposite of what he said after the game on Saturday. So we'll get you through those comments. What do we expect tonight out of Darren Peterson as KU makes its home Big 12 debut? It's all coming for you on Sports Daily. I'll rock you completely. Don't go away.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Making our way through a Tuesday here on Sports Daily. Glad to have voice of the K-State Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, with us. We mentioned Darren Peterson as Big 12 play continues here. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Maybe we'll even get Wyatt's take on just a very strange situation up the road in Lawrence. But before we do that, Wyatt, K-State, let's start with football, I think. Avery's coming back, right? We wondered if it would happen. But, man, that's like it right now. We see Toby headed to Indiana. We see Austin Romaine enter the portal, Jace Brown enter the portal. We already know Dylan Edwards entered the portal. Like, there's a lot of headline guys that won't be back, even though Avery will be back. Have you talked to any of the coaching staff? Like, what is the feel right now for where this roster stands as there are, 4,000 players in the transfer portal, I think, already?
Yeah, you know, I haven't talked to a lot of the guys, but the little bit of time that I've been there, I would tell you that I think it's kind of one of those things where they were expecting a little bit of this. Maybe not necessarily with a couple of those guys that you mentioned. I think we were all a little bit surprised by Chidi Obiezor and Toby Osunsami, but yet I've said this in other interviews, guys, and I'll say it to you. With this landscape, you're crazy not to get in and at least explore because of the money out there. I saw something earlier this morning, different positions of college football players and what the average may end up being before this is all said and done. And it's staggering money. So it's a business now. It's a pay-for-play model, however you want to say it. And I'll just throw this out there as an example. I'm hearing $2 million for Austin Romaine. That's crazy money. Crazy.
Yep. Now, Wyatt, my parents should have put me in shoulder pads instead of giving me a baseball bat. I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you money on a Tuesday morning. In the same breath, though, you know, that was always the biggest question was Avery Johnson and what it would be because, you know, no Chris Klieman there, but Colin Klein coming back had to do something his last year, his last chance to get to the NFL. And he makes a point of pride of saying, like, there's no loyalty in college football. I want to be a Kansas State Wildcat. Like, how big of a deal is that in 2026 for your starting quarterback to do that?
Well, it's a great question, and I think it's the obvious answer. It's just off the charts in terms of how important it is. You win at this level of college football with a really, really good quarterback, and then you work down from there. I'm assuming both of you guys would agree with that, right? I mean, this is a young man who – and this also shows me maybe getting older too, but – does it just seem like Avery's been there about 10 minutes and here we are going into his final season? That's how quick this thing rolls, man. I appreciate Avery for how hard he works and what he's done, his loyalty. I think he wanted to try to make this thing work all along. You know, he's making good rev share money, but also I think making more than that on the, you know, on the outside with the collectives. So I don't think money was necessarily the single most important thing for him. You know, he's been through a lot of change in his time. That's an obvious statement, but yet he has stayed, you know, true to the Wildcats. And I frankly appreciate that a lot. And I just want to say, too, going back to what we talked about a moment ago, I don't think these coaches are down in any way. I think they expected to lose some of these guys. I think they have an in on a lot of players. I think we saw that yesterday with the 7 commitments. The coaching staff is pretty much done now, so they're rolling. And I think everybody's excited about it. I know everybody's excited about it.
You mentioned $2 million, Wyatt, for Austin Romaine. Some of the rumored numbers with Brendan Sorsby for Texas Tech, the Cincinnati quarterback headed there is for $5 million. I just, like, for me, TJ and I've had this conversation about other players. I do find it, and I'm curious, like, when we hear these numbers, I think it's a little curious, and I find it a little hard to believe that Texas Tech is dishing out $7 million for 2 players. I think what are the chances we're catching inflated numbers on this? That just doesn't.
Hey, you ever seen Landman, Jacob? They got that kind of money down there.
I grew up in that world. The Landman money's that's Texas and Texas A&M money. There's a little of it at Tech, but even then, like that's not. It's not just Texas Tech. Like it's all over the country.
Yeah,
that math doesn't work for me every year. Like I know they've got a lot of money, but $7 million for two players. I just find that a little hard to believe that donors are going to keep that energy every year. Like, what's their ROI for that? That's a pretty crazy amount of money. We're talking about two players with what's been rumored for Texas Tech.
It's a wonderful question / thought, and here's why I say that. Because I've been asked multiple times a very similar question, but asked more in a little harsher way. As an example, is this really rev share money that they're getting? If it is $5 million for Sorsby, is it all part of the 22% of the rev share?
Right.
And I'm going to tell you, there's no way that is the case.
Remember the $20 million cap that universities had to stay under? I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, we've blown to 30 plus, TJ. That's a fact. Or at least at that upper crest level, right? Everybody talked so much a year ago about Ohio State and what they spent. Well, go look at Georgia. Go look at Texas Tech. Those types of teams, they spent that this year, right? All along, since the House settlement, I think everybody in college athletics thought it was going to be better. And there are, in some ways, that it is better. And yet, I think there's a lot of worry about what. Show me the money. Remember that line? Yeah. Show me how they're doing that and staying within the rev share, because I don't know that's necessarily
that's never
going to
hold up anyway.
And they'll policing
say,
of it,
they'll just say it's NIL. I mean, that's never going to hold up.
Yeah. More power to them if they can do it. And it certainly helps. I've said this before, to help have a couple of billionaires in your donor base. Yeah. Right. I mean, it just does. It is hard to fathom and put it all together that this is all. No. Again, I'm not accusing them of anything. I just want somebody to say to me, yeah, this is all coming from RevShare. Or no.
Yeah, I mean, the big overarching thought that we've had about 15 different conversations in college athletics right now is that there's rules in place, but nobody enforces the rules. So there's no rules. You know, everybody brings up the transfer rule about you should have to sit out a year if you transfer. That's the rule, but nobody enforces that rule. They just sign the runoff waiver and they go along. Somebody needs to be in charge and do all that stuff. And that's a whole thing we could spend 2 hours on. So we'll change topics before we get too carried away here. We'll go to basketball. We made the joke that all three of our Kansas schools lost on Saturday afternoon. K-State lost by the biggest margin of defeat. You might have felt the best about them. They went 3-21 from three, and that feels like the stat that sticks out to me.
Well, it was frustrating from that perspective, no doubt. What I would tell you is I think you can look at the loss and take some positives away from it.
Yeah, BYU's
I've never been a guy that believes that, you know, losing is good. However, in this particular case, I loved how hard they played. In terms of effort, I don't think there's any question it was their best game of the year. I think you could argue too, it might have been one of the best defensive efforts of the year. They were getting on the floor. They were playing a little shorthanded without Elias. And I think they were getting some decent shots, but I credit BYU a little bit too. I thought K-State AJ DeBons had 24, but he also had 7 turnovers. So I think there's, you know, you can see some good there. What I want to see happen is take that effort into Wednesday night and Saturday and next Wednesday and the following Saturday and those types of things. It's hard to do. It's hard to be at optimum level every time for 18 consecutive conference games, but you can't mask 3-21. You feel a little bit, I guess I'll say, disappointed in that you had opportunities. You're within 5, 6, 7 points most of the game, and you can't find a way at home. A lot of times that's how you make your hay, right? But it didn't happen Saturday.
I'm with you on being one of their better performances of the year. but I'm not going to pretend like that doesn't concern me. Because
for sure, it should.
One of their best performances of the year leads to a home loss in the Big 12 by double digits. So if that's your best and you can't beat BYU at home, do you expect to beat Arizona on the road? Do you expect do you expect to win any games on the road? Who can you beat? Right. You know what I mean? Like that would mean making the tournament is a tall task, and I think that's true. But yeah. it's kind of hard to swallow a little bit.
You said that perfectly, and excuse me. Frankly, a lot of us around the program are talking that way right at the moment. You know, where are you going to get 8 or 9 wins in this league, right? You better not lose too many home games, and they've already done that. It is a real, real challenge to play at Arizona. We all know that. We have a young man on our team as a young assistant coach, Anthony Winchester, who played at Western Kentucky. And he was telling me yesterday as we were getting on the plane to come down here that his first college game was against Arizona at the McHale Center. And I said, well, how'd it go? And he goes, not well. Our best player didn't play. Our second best player tore his ACL 5 minutes in. We lost by 35. But then he started telling me some of the players that they had and what an incredible experience it was, even in defeat. They're 14-0. They're winning by about 24 points a game on average. They have probably more length and skill than BYU, which is scary. But yeah, but here's the thing. I'm just going to be blunt. People will not like me for saying this in Wildcat land, but if you could get the Saturday game, right, and come back and beat UCF and then maybe win at OSU, I don't know that they'll do that, but it keep grinding. If you can get to 8 or 9 in this thing, and maybe you beat Oklahoma State a couple of times, maybe you beat West Virginia a couple of times. I don't know. It's going to be hard, but I get what you're saying. You when you lose at home, it stings in this league because they're so hard on the road.
Yeah, that's the thing is that, you know, they're playing, you know, as you said, one of the best games that they've played, you know, since we saw them, you know, beat Tulsa, which actually ended up being a pretty good win. Tulsa's really good. Yeah. But as we're in it now, that's kind of the conversation that every coach, every fan base around the country is having is that the ramp has ended. You know, you're in it. You're in the stuff. And for K-State, you know, it's not a, you know, you're going to be okay. Like, you'll get the bid. Have to worry about that or you just have to worry about the conference tournament later. Like, they are right there on the bubble and we're going to probably see their name there all year going up and down. Like, every single game on this schedule is going to matter. It's going to be tough to do against Arizona, but again, it's the Big 12 and we've seen K-State, you know, upset teams before. We saw what we did at Iowa State last year.
Yeah, well, I would add to that, and I think it's a great point, but one thing that is helping K-State right now, at least to some degree, is Nebraska and Seton Hall. Creighton's playing better. You mentioned Tulsa. The non-con has helped them more than I thought it was going to a month ago, right? Cal's another one. I don't know if you saw the Cal-Notre Dame finish the other night, but that was...
Day-day Ames!
Yeah, but it all matters. They've played well since the K-State beat them at Bramlage. The point is, you combine that with the teams that you're playing almost twice a week in this league... You have a chance, but you got to win your share. Winning your share is the hard part because I go back to Saturday. I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought you could make an argument that was PJ's best game as a Wildcat. Yeah, maybe not in the rebounding, but everything else, he was really pretty good.
But then
you have Castillo go 0-for-5 from three as an example. So there are ups and downs.
It does feel like it's going to have to run through PJ. And I know that was obvious early in the season, and then it was like, well, they're going to need somebody else to step up. But I mean, this is what he did for Memphis, albeit not against competition like this. But I don't know that there's a better path than to just kind of go all in with him.
Bottom line is, I agree. And for K-State to get to those marks that we're talking, maybe win 8 or 9 games in the league, they're going to have to be a little bit more consistent, even with the scoring, which has been a strength. I'll use last Saturday one more time as an example. PJ was really pretty good. You got 13 from Castillo on a night or on a day where he didn't necessarily shoot the ball from three very well. Obdy was in double figures, but go look at Nate Johnson's line. He didn't even score, played 34 minutes. They need everybody to be in it is the point and do their job. And I think they are getting better, but the games are getting harder too.
They are. We'll talk about Arizona really quickly. As we've talked about how hard of a game this will be, I'm sure that you've watched your film and everything. They're the number one team in the country. They've got Koa Pete, who I think was the number one player in the – or one of the top players in the country, five-star, that went there, and he's looked the part so far. They can score it.
They can, and here's the interesting thing for me. They have three returning starters. Two of those guys are now coming off of the bench. Koa Pete is one reason why. Braden Burries is another reason why. I mean, they have lots and lots and lots of skill. They're only about eight deep, but I would argue that their eight are as good as most and maybe better than a lot. They have size. Jaden Bradley, their point guard, I think is hugely underrated, really good player. But, man, when your bench is Aristo, Del Orso, and Tobe Awaka, Awaka comes off a 16.12 rebound game at Utah. That's what they're bringing off the bench. And this is a 6'8", 255-pound guy who's played in 120 career games, fellas. They're pretty good. They're pretty good. And they were 13-3 at home a year ago, 8-0 this time. So they're a challenge, especially at home.
You'll hear it right here on KFH, the home of K-State Athletics. Wyatt will be on the call out in Tucson tomorrow night. Wyatt, we appreciate it.
You bet. Wyatt, you guys.
We haven't talked. Nobody played any defense in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
Yeah, I know. It was a fun game to call. It was a challenge awesome. Because Arizona State had, as an example, 35 opt-outs. I had four running backs on my chart. I'll make this quick. Four running backs on my chart. One of those guys played. They played three other running backs. Two of them hadn't had a carry all year long and are really talented. And then another one had nine carries. So it was a little challenging. But, yeah. Wow, what a game it was.
They scored points.
It was so fun to call.
That was cool that you were out there. I missed you when you mentioned that, and TJ told me that's awesome. Congrats on that. Just that was one of the better bowl games. We had it on because it was on KWCH. We're just like, oh, man, yeah. this game rules. All right, Wyatt, we appreciate it. We'll talk again next week. Good luck on the call. Safe travels to Tucson.
Thanks, fellas. Great talking to you.
I'm excited to see Arizona, TJ, as the number one team. I haven't seen them yet. Thanks to Wyatt Thompson. If you missed anything with the voice of the Wildcats, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. A couple things to kind of revisit with Wyatt there is, and we will get to the Darren Peterson latest. I just, man, I don't know, TJ. We've talked about this. I'm a skeptic with some of these numbers. The reporting on Darren Peterson, who with NIL is, you know, these basketball stars with shoe deals and everything else. Like, I think his reported number ended at like 3.8 million. That seems big to me, but it's like, okay, shoe deals, whatever. Some of these football numbers that get thrown around, I just don't think that I'm a skeptic. I don't think they're consistently as high. Like, where people are just like, where does it come from? Somebody heard from somebody that he's going to make 5 million. Is it an agent trying to, you know, beat their chest and make it? Because here's what I'll tell you that I have heard. A lot of empty promises in this world.
There has been.
Promises that are not kept, players that don't get nearly what they were promised. Like, I just don't know if I can get on board with believing that Texas Tech is going to spend $7 million on two players, neither of which. I mean, Austin Romaine is a top prospect. Brendan Sorsby, quarterback of Cincinnati, is worth $5 million.
The number one player in the transfer portal, Brendan Sorsby?
I like Brendan Sorsby. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a huge get for Texas Tech. $5 million?
I mean, if they didn't pay it, LSU was going to.
This isn't a Texas Tech conversation. Texas Tech, good for them. If that's the going rate, good
for them. I know, but I'm just saying, that's the going rate.
That's not the point. My thing, I think sometimes these numbers get inflated. That's my point. If Darren Peterson is worth $3.8 million, then I'm not sure I believe that Brendan Sorsby is getting five.
You don't think a football player is more valuable to you than a basketball player?
There's 90 of them on a roster.
The quarterback's
and if you're talking about actual NIL value, there's nobody more valuable in an NIL perspective than Darren Peterson is. Or AJ DeVance or one of these basketball stars.
That's a whole other conversation, which I'm confused about because it doesn't make a lot of sense of like these numbers. And it's obviously it's not the NFL or the NBA where there's contracts that are released and you can see the promised amount that is signed to like these deals that they do, and revenue sharing makes it a little bit better, but like what is $5 million? Like, is that $3 million of revenue sharing and $2 million of NIL? Like, I don't know what that number, and nobody knows what that number is.
And that's I don't the hard know part that part either.
But and I don't know again, how like, you and the other part, I don't know how, and they've done it for 5 years now, but I don't know how you promise like you're going to make $2 million in NIL money, because like, especially now, like revenue sharing, you're guaranteed that money. Like you can say, you can write them a check when they walk in the door, but like NIL, like how do you say you're going to get $2 million of NIL here? Or it's like, you call up the car dealership and say, hey, can you give them $1 million? You know what I mean? Like, if that's the NIL part of this, like, I don't know how you promise that. I don't know how Darren Peterson, you can promise that he's going to make $3.8 million.
Well, and you can sign a contract. If it's NIL, you can just sign a contract with the, you know,
Adidas, the, whatever.
Yes, right. But that part is simpler. I think there is a lot of, and I'm not talking to, this isn't talking to any specific situation, but just in general terms, because I've talked to coaches, there is a lot of, oh yeah, you'll get this and player doesn't get close.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. And that's the other part of this too. And I'm not with you on the fact, like I 100% believe that Texas Tech is going to spend $20 million on this football roster.
That's fine.
Like,
$20 million? Okay. Well, $7 million of it just went to two players. What about the other 80?
I mean, whatever. Maybe it'll be $30 million. Whatever it is, but like I believe that they're spending that much money. But there is a part of it too where it's like it says $5 million. Like they might end up getting it 4.2 or so. You know what I mean? Like, and you can't promise a true five. Like, there's no binding way to say you will get $5 million, especially if you're putting half of it as NIL money.
I think my point is like. People will hear that was it, but that doesn't mean that was it. Like until a player says it or shows you the receipts, right? Like, yeah, we heard, I heard XYZ's getting this much to go there. And then it just gets reported because it's all.
And it's such a silly and it's become a thing where it's like the NIL valuations that became a thing, whatever this, and like On Three, that's their big thing that they do, is they do the NIL valuations where they'll say like, yeah, like this player has a valuation of $3.2 million. It's like how much they should be worth. And it's like, what does that mean?
You're worth what somebody will pay you.
Yeah. I don't understand.
And some of the ones when this kind of first started, I feel pretty good about information I was given from people close to some of these situations, and this would have only been 3 years ago. I mean, we're talking like not even close to some of the numbers that are being thrown around now. Not even close. And I brought the one up to you the other day off the air. Remember when Nigel Pack went to Miami?
Mm-hmm.
And that was for what, $700,000?
$800,000 in a car.
That was, at the time, the biggest we had ever heard of.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that, in the same week, I remember the Shockers gave Armchair Strategies, what it used to be, gave Craig Porter Jr. a car, and we're like, no way. No way they gave a car.
So what was that, 3 seasons ago on Nigel Pack?
Yeah.
Valuations have jumped that much in 3 years?
I mean, they have, because
all I want to know is, are players actually getting this much money, or are bloggers online just saying that they heard from most likely an agent who's never been an agent before, who's just trying to get their foot in the water, be like, yeah, we got him $5 million. Okay.
I mean,
I just don't know if I believe it. I'm a skeptic.
There's millions of dollars being thrown around.
There are, sure. But there are thousands of players moving around, and they can't all make that much money. That much money.
I don't know.
I mean, there's not.
I mean, that's just the, like, it's grown into this thing now where Texas Tech's a prime example of, they've got a billionaire alum.
That's saying, great. Like, billionaire's not going to be a billionaire very long if he's spending $100 million a year on players for a football team. Like, it just, again, you're not a billionaire because you're bad at business. I think there's I think we have to pump the brakes on just believing all the wild and crazy numbers that get. Maybe I'm wrong. I just, man, it's hard for me to believe. There's a lot of teams. There's a lot of players. And it's all got to be privately funded because these athletic programs aren't generating that kind of money. They're generating, in a lot of ways, enough money to, you know, to lift the sinking ship of a lot of other things on campus. It's crazy to think about that. One of those NIL guys, Darren Peterson, yesterday, TJ, Bill Self, said that if you think for a second this was a minutes restriction, it wasn't. It was that his legs wouldn't let him go in the second half. Although immediately after the game, Bill Self talked about the minutes restriction they had Darren Peterson on. So here we go again now. Like, why can't we just say he's hurt? Like, his legs hurt. It acts up. It flares up. And we have to deal with it as it comes. Why is that so hard?
I don't know why. Like, I see the vision that Coach Self is talking about a little bit of, like, he was probably on a minutes restriction. And then I think that Bill Self probably pushed the minutes restriction a little too hard in the first half. And then I think he might have gotten hurt. And then so I think – I don't know. But I think that there probably was a minute restrictions in place. And then it didn't – you know, it didn't happen that way. But I mean, the fact that you say one thing and then you change it and then say the other thing the next time you talk, like –
Well, I feel bad for Bill Self because clearly he's trying to cover somebody's butt somehow. Like, oh, we put him on a minutes restriction because that's what his family wanted. But then he's getting like, why would you put him on a minutes restriction and not play him in the second half? Well, listen, it's not that kind of minutes restriction. Like, I understand. Like, I get it. Why? Like, he's having to backtrack a little bit. And like, it's got to be frustrating to appease three different camps. At the end of the day, just – Darren Peterson has a recurring leg issue. He will be able to play while it doesn't hurt or while it doesn't flare up. And when it does, he'll have to come out. That's it, right? There doesn't need more explanation. He feels great going into a game. At some point, it flares up. That's it. Like that, just like, get wrap your head around that. Like, he's got a nagging injury. Like, it's not that unusual. It's not that unusual for a player to have a nagging injury. He's got a nagging injury that he's trying to play through. To me, like that, it's as simple as that. Now, can they manage it differently? Sure they can. And I would imagine that on tomorrow or tonight, it'll probably be maybe a little less in the first half so that they can try and cut him loose. Because it does seem like it comes at the same amount of minutes played every game. Oddly, yeah. For whatever reason, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but there's been a pattern there.
But Bill Self had the same, you know, sentiment that we talked about yesterday on the topic of saying, like, there's no science and there's no real causation of saying, like, he can play 24 minutes, but the 25th is where his hamstring is going to get pissed off. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like,
but it's kind of been that way.
Right? There's been a little bit of a correlation of it, but like, who's to say, you know? And like, who is Bill Self to, like, especially, and like, the thing that the people don't see, and this is what Shreyas talked about a lot, and this was his point earlier in the season, is that, like, man, he's playing or he's practicing, and they say he looks great, and like, obviously practice isn't a game, but it's not like they're just having shoot around, you know? Like, he's playing basketball. And it looks fine. And then they get to the game and it happens. And it's like, it's just a weird thing. And I don't know. At this point, it's probably a little bit of a mental thing for Darren Peterson
Yes, for sure.
Everybody involved.
I'm going to give you here's the minutes he's played. He's played now in six games. 22, 28, 23, 31, 23. So it does seem to be hitting at some point. After 20 minutes, after about 22 minutes, somewhere between 20. So my question, and look, I'm trying to get through Stranger Things right now where you're just like, well, that doesn't really make any sense. It doesn't make sense. And sometimes, like, in that show, and I don't love this season, but they're like, whoa, it's because you've got special power, whatever. Maybe just try it. Maybe just try to play him 10 in the first half so he can maybe play 12 or 15 in the second half.
I don't know.
Why not? I mean, like, you've tried everything else. Just give it a whirl. See what happens.
They might. And I think that, like, TCU, obviously every Big 12 game's hard, and TCU isn't a scrub by any means. But, like, you're not playing against Arizona. Maybe this is the one where you say, like, you're going to play 10 minutes in the first half, and then you're just going to see what you can do in the second half, and we'll see how long you can go for, and we'll figure it out. But, like, I guess not 10, maybe 5 minutes in the first half. I don't know what you do. But, like, The hard part about it is that that being the answer just isn't going to be good enough. I feel like, you know, like I feel like KU and the fans and NBA people and everybody involved here, like the answer isn't going to be good enough if it's just, yeah, well, I mean, let him play 15 minutes a game and, you know, like it's going to happen every game and it'll be fine. You know, like nobody wants that to be the answer. I think like no parties involved want that to be the answer.
No, I think NBA, I still don't think NBA teams are going to be terribly worried. I think they'll feel like they can get him in and deal and just be able to handle it. Right. Just man, it's hard because he's so good. I wish there was a way to like rewire or like if you're the team, just hey, Peterson, we got him for 20 minutes. The rest of the game, like we've got to be able to turn it on and play it sounds impossible. I get it. Like it's not going to be easy. The strangest part of it is we've seen them without him at times look pretty good, but they're so clearly better with him, right? It's a tough situation. We'll see it tonight. TCU, by the way, TCU who just beat Baylor, who has a win over Florida, who played Michigan tight. TCU's pretty dang good. Like this is not going to be just some simple game. We'll look at the line in a little while and talk about it. Another hour of Sports Daily coming your way. Don't go away. Here on KFH.